Hi, my name is Leah Kerr. I'm 63 years old. Today is August 6, 2020. I'm recording from Cary, North Carolina, in the living room where I live with my mom. I don't live in the living room. I'm here with my mother, and her name is Shirley Kerr.
Hi, my name is Shirley Kerr. I'm going on 85 years old this month. Today is August 6, 2020, and I'm recording from Cary, North Carolina. And my partner's name is Leah, my daughter. And we'll get started, right?
We'll get started. Okay, let's start with this since we're talking about military voices. Let's start with how did you and Dad meet?
We met at Kent State University where he was a student, and we were introduced by my cousin. It was a mutual
Attraction.
attraction.
That's good.
And that was in 53, and
Okay.
we were married in 56.
And what's his name?
His name is William Kerr.
Okay. And so, what was your introduction to military life?
Introduction to military life was basically I was working at a recruiting office in Cleveland, Ohio. And your father had finished up his ROTC training at Kent State. And I took care of his paperwork, his introduction into the military.
Did you encourage him to go into the military?
No, I didn't encourage him. Well, I'll take that back. There was a toss-up. It was professional football or the military. And I thought the military would be the best bet. So,
Good choice.
good choice, yeah.
So then, what was it like being an officer's wife?
Being an officer's wife was difficult in the 50s.
What year did he first go in? What year?
57.
Okay.
And of course, a lot of racial strife. And he was in the Medical Service Corps, and it was very difficult, basically, because you didn't have that many black military officers going in the service at that time. So some of our assignments, especially in the South, and Texas was his first duty station, and a lot of hostilities against blacks in
How did you
Texas.
experience that? How did what did people do to you?
Well, it wasn't so much what they did to us as what we observed. Like, I can recall at the, we did not live on post when we first went to San Antonio, Texas. We lived off post. And in the community where we lived, at the end of our street, there was a hotel. And I faced a sign going to work every day that said whites only.
Ooh.
And of course, coming from Ohio in the 50s, I hadn't experienced a great deal of discrimination. Any discrimination that we faced in Ohio was placed upon we did to ourselves.
What do you mean,
Meaning
self-segregating?
self-segregating, yeah.
Oh.
Did not really in our community we did not really
Interact.
see any signs or anything of that nature. In school, I was the only in high school, I was the only black in my class until I was a senior in high school.
All the way
So,
through grade school? Wow.
yeah. Our
Okay.
community at any given time, maybe when I was growing up, only had about 100 blacks. So the experience was totally different for me when we went into the military. But getting back to Texas, Texas was cruel, not at the military installation, but in the community as a whole. And it was hot, there were bugs, and I did not like Texas, but I knew that we'd have to return there periodically because that's where your dad had to go back for schooling. So we were in and out of Texas quite a bit.
So now I know his experience and your experience were different.
Yeah.
How was it for you dealing with officers' wives?
Well, that was another. I don't think really the hostility was there or really evident. They appeared to be they treated me just like they treated anyone else. I'm trying to think. I never had any kind of confrontation with any of the wives or whatever. I think maybe it was because we were in the medical corps and our affiliation was with doctors and doctors' wives. So they were all very well educated and probably had some exposure to living or going to school.
So, but Dad didn't have it quite as easy as that, did he? I mean, he had...
No, the expectations for a Black officer were high, you know. So we were always conscientious of doing the right thing. I guess it's not so dissimilar to what Obama faced when he went into the White House.
Well, you was
and not
setting a good
level.
Setting a good example for our race or something
right,
like
that's
that.
Right. Yeah. We always had to be conscientious of who we were and where we were, you know.
So how did that affect our family life?
Family life, I don't think you all had any real problems. If you did, you never expressed them because 9 times out of 10, anywhere we went, we were the only minorities in the neighborhood. And I realized later on that was probably difficult for you all. I know it was difficult for Jeffrey.
Right.
You know, he had a tendency.
How many kids do you have?
Three. Two boys, girl, you're the oldest.
I know it affected me and how you wanted me to present myself all the time.
Yes.
All had to be very
yes.
well-dressed,
right.
clean.
Right.
Manners. All
no
that
cutting
stuff.
Up.
No cutting up. Had to behave.
That's right.
But, I mean... I don't know how dissimilar that would be from a white family, officer's family. I mean, everybody, I think we had to do it even more, be even better.
That's right.
Be
That's
even
right.
better. Yeah. Well, so what did you like about military life? Anything?
I like the organization of it all. You always knew what was expected of you, whether it was going to the general's house or New Year's or whatever, the etiquette of it all. You had to know the etiquette of how many name cards to take with you and where to place them. And
how did you learn that?
Well, I think by and large, when we first went in, we had a booklet.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. But
is that it called the Army Wives book or something like that?
Yeah.
I saw that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And of course we had teas. Officers' wives had teas. So you had to learn how to pour.
Oh.
The etiquette of a brunch or whatever the case may be. And each officer's wife always had to take a turn at the serving. And knowing how to pour English tea and any other kind of tea or coffee or whatever, the etiquette of it all. So
would they come to your house?
Yeah. We had it either at the officers' club or at your home. And
So did you feel like you were being evaluated by all those women when they would come to your house?
No, because I had pretty well been schooled at home. You know, when I was growing up, I mean, we set the table and had it set properly and everything else. So that wasn't a problem at all. And every Sunday when I was a kid, my grandmother was married to a minister, so my job on Sundays was to, after Sunday school, was to set the table for lunch. So, no, that wasn't a problem. Etiquette wasn't a problem.
Well, I'm not saying that etiquette was a problem, but I'm just saying because of the relationship, you know, the segregation and desegregation at that time, if you felt like you were being overly examined by these white women who would come into your house.
I may have been, but you know, that rolled off of me. I didn't pay that any attention. I could care less what they were thinking. You know?
Okay. Well, then what was the hardest part about the military life?
Hardest part, like I said, was usually off post, off base, where you had some kind of confrontation. And maybe we'll get into that when we move around, like I think housing, off-post housing, trying to find decent housing, neighborhoods. The first thing we
Why is that difficult? Was it hard for us to move into a neighborhood?
Oh, yeah. We had problems with that. But trying to find a decent school, number one. Schooling was the first thing we looked at. We tried to move into neighborhoods where you all could have good schools. And back there then, you know, we had a lot of redlining and everything else when it came to housing.
So people wouldn't sell you houses?
Well, sell, rent first.
Oh, they wouldn't even rent to you?
Rent was a problem first.
What would
and
they
I
say?
Think in Texas, I think we found housing through a postman. He would tell us we were driving through a neighborhood where the school we had.
So a black postman?
No.
Oh, white guy.
And we asked about the neighborhood to a postman if there were any houses for rent or whatever, and he directed us. Otherwise, I had a friend in Texas who was a school teacher, and we rented our first place from her parents in Texas. But when we got to like Denver, we were redlined. In a neighborhood, we later found out that they had a petition to keep us out and purchasing a land. And
so
sign of the times.
How many? Name the places we lived.
Oh, we lived in so many places, Lee. I can't even name
them. I think you might remember some of them.
Of course, Cleveland and San Antonio, Texas. And Levittown, Pennsylvania, Fort Dix, New Jersey, Puerto Rico.
Where Billy was born.
Yeah, Billy's born in Puerto Rico. San Antonio, Fort Carson, Colorado, back to Newcomerstown when your dad went to Korea, Fort Meade, Maryland, Germany. We were in southern Germany at Stuttgart. And then we moved up north to Kaiserslautern. And then back to the States, Denver, Aurora. We lived in Aurora. And
then he retired by then, right?
No, he went to Vietnam first.
Oh, okay.
And then Aurora, Colorado again, and then Columbia, Maryland, and then Terry, North Carolina.
Yeah. So
a moving.
Yeah, it was on an average of how often?
About a year and a half each place or so.
We had to learn how to make new friends all the time.
That was the difficult part. Although Jeffrey always had many, many friends. You didn't do badly. You had a lot of friends. Billy was more of an introvert.
Billy?
Yeah, but he had loads of friends, but he was a bit quieter than you two.
Me and Jeff took up all the air in the room or something.
Billy was like me. Billy was the middle child, so.
Yeah.
So then how do you think that kind of life shaped your kids?
I don't know. I think you're pretty outgoing. You like to travel. You don't know strangers. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but you make friends quickly, I think. And your friends are just like our friends have been, long-lasting.
You know, yeah. Talk about your long-lasting friendships.
Military, I have had friends from the military that came along probably in 1956 or 7. Some of them have been 60 years of friendship.
Wow.
And they're still around. We still keep in touch with each other.
How many of those do you?
Oh, now the you know.
I know. It's time.
We're aging, so we've decreased in numbers. So.
Yeah. Well, that's natural because, lost your husband. Yeah. Some of your other friends have lost their husbands, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know Dad tried to convince me to go into the military. I remember.
I think he tried to convince all of you to go into the military because Billy, when we were in Colorado. No, we were with Maryland, right? When he graduated from college.
Uh-huh.
And before he even went to college, we tried to convince him to apply to the academy because based on the fact that your father was an officer and we had some senators.
The Air Force Academy?
Mm-hmm.
He went
for a week or two and came back home and said, no way, I'm not going there. I'm not going anywhere where people spit in your face and you can't do anything about it.
he said, you can forget that. So nobody, we tried to convince each one of them. I know. I remember when I was in high school and Dad suggested it. And it was 1970, what year was it? 1975 or something. Yeah. And there was protests and hippies and all this. I'm like, not going into the military. Yeah. I don't like people telling me what to do.
Well, you know, that may have been, maybe some of that could have rubbed you the wrong way when we were in Salina, Kansas, when your dad was in Vietnam. And when you were in school, there were a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, but periodically there were bomb scares.
Mm.
There were calls into the school and you all would have to vacate the school building. And then—
Did we seem scared because of that?
Well,
I don't remember it.
Well, Salina, Kansas was a home for waiting wives. So I think you probably experienced the bad side of the war. There were people that petitioned outside.
Oh, they protested in Salina? Okay.
And we had bomb scares. I mean, we even had bomb scares at the officers' club. And we would be there for, the wives would be there for a meeting, club meeting or something, and somebody would call in a bomb scare or something like that. So, and then Saturday was the day that we usually took kids and just dropped you off on post at the movie theater.
Deposited us.
Yeah, like a babysitter.
But well, I loved it. I think maybe that's where I learned to love movies.
Well, anyway, we even had a bomb scare. I think someone set it on fire or something.
Movie theater?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So we had to run up there and retrieve all of you. But yeah, Vietnam was not a good time for us.
Well, Dad was in Saigon the whole time?
Yeah, he was over the hospital.
And what was that like for you, having such a dangerous unaccompanied tour?
That was, for most military wives, that's pretty tough, because you have to be mother and father, and then you have to hold it together when you know that maybe your father would not return or whatever. And that was the oddest kind of experience, because the chaplain would come to visit you, and we didn't want the chaplain to come to visit, because we always thought the chaplain was bringing bad news, you know, and he may be just dropping by to check out to see if you were okay or not.
I've heard that when they go to tell a wife that their husband has died, it's like the chaplain and a military mm-hmm. person. So mm-hmm. if you see a car pull up and a mm-hmm. whole bunch of people get out,
yeah,
that's when you go hide.
Mm-hmm. Right? And the way in Salina, the way that they removed children from the classroom, they were taken out very quickly.
Oh.
And so kids were always exposed to the fact that somebody, one of their friends, had lost a dad or a mom, whatever.
So, a mom. There weren't that many women serving.
Well, there
also
were
nurses.
Nurses.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So there would be some husbands there by themselves.
Some husbands came. No, they came like from Vietnam for their R&R, their rest and recuperation.
Yeah.
And whomever returned would be the dad of the community.
He'd take care of the cars,
take care of the kids. I feel sorry for them. But
some rest and relaxation.
Yeah.
I bet they enjoyed it, though.
Yeah.
So you have good memories from all of this, huh? What do you think some of our biggest benefits were?
Exposure, being very broad-minded. As far as travel and people are concerned, I think those were the good points. Being able to take you throughout Europe and expose you to different countries, different food.
Although Billy didn't adjust to different food. No, he didn't
well.
Do very well with food.
Oh.
And shopping was good. I mean, when I look around the house, I see things from everywhere we've been. I think maybe it broadened everybody's world as to mm-hmm. what's out there, what's
yeah.
available.
Yeah. It was a good life by and large, but there were drawbacks. And basically, I think most of the drawbacks, I'm sad to say, were in the United States. And that was the hard part.
Well, I remember in Germany, them touching our skin and wanting to touch our hair.
Yeah.
See what that was like. But yeah, in the United States they didn't want to touch anything.
They didn't even want us.
No.
And that was a hard part, because even when we would come up to Ohio through Texas, from Texas to Ohio, we couldn't sleep at a hotel or anything, you know.
Would it have a sign that would say that, or you?
We just knew that
didn't stop there.
We couldn't have accommodations. We were doing good to be able to go to a bathroom.
I remember going to a bathroom on the side of the road plenty
yeah.
of times.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, back then, I think that was a fairly normal thing. There weren't places everywhere.
It was like in Germany, going to the toilet behind those piles of wood or
yeah.
whatever it was,
yeah.
you know, on the
yeah.
side of the road. But no, the attitude in the United States was different back there. Then.
I bet he got more respect from people overseas than
in the United States.
In the United States,
even though he was a captain or a major or whatever, you'd have people come up to him and call him a sergeant. Sarge, because way back when, being a sergeant was the best that we could possibly do, you know. And then when you have these college graduates coming in with commissions, you know, different. Wow. Yeah, it was different.
Wow.
What else?
Okay. Yes. I don't know what else. Maybe a quick question
about what?
How was it? I know that your family also came to visit us at times.
Oh yeah.
How was that for them?
Oh, they loved it. My mother, she flew from Berlin to Paris, or went to England or whatever. She had a ball. The atmosphere for us was totally different when we were in Europe. It was just, you felt different. You felt freer for some reason. You didn't feel inhibited, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how did you feel about being a military spouse?
Like I said, I enjoyed most of it. It was difficult because, you know, your father was trying to make rank. You didn't want to do anything to jeopardize that, you know. And
it's a real partnership when you're an officer, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's almost as if.
Well, they say that they don't grade the wives, but way back when they did grade wives on your conduct and behavior, and whether or not you were accessible, or, you know, what you were doing within the community.
And what your kids were doing.
Mm-hmm.
When you were growing up, did you know anyone who was in the military?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who's that?
I had 2-3 uncles that were in the military, and I guess one of my grandfathers, World War I, so it goes back, way back.
And then your brother also went in, right?
Brother was in the Air Force for about 30 years.
But he had a pretty interesting job.
Yes.
What did Uncle Tommy do?
I can't say what Uncle Tommy did. It was sort of above top secret, so I can't talk.
But it involved carrying around briefcases.
Getting assigned.
Handcuffs to his wrist and stuff like that.
I don't know if it was handcuffed. Oh. Yeah.
Well, you know, I must have rubbed off on somebody somehow. Anthony, your grandson, he went to ROTC, but
he wanted to fly. But, you know, it was during war times, and we sort of discouraged him from going into the military.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Because he would have gone to Iraq or something like that.
Yeah. And he has a good career and doing well. And
yeah.
Maybe it worked out okay for him, but he really wanted to fly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all the questions I have for you. Thank you for taking me on those adventures.
I think you had a good life.
I think it added a lot to my life. I mean, I love travel. I love meeting people. Yeah. I love new things. So I don't, when I look at people who haven't had that experience, first of all, I can't understand when people say they know somebody from kindergarten. Oh, we've been friends since kindergarten. Or that they lived in the same town their entire lives.
Oh, that was a good part of military.
Why?
You knew good and well you were going to have a new assignment after a year or two. So
if you didn't like it, it was going to go away.
Neighbors, you didn't care because you knew sooner or later you'd be out of there. So you can withstand anything.
I had to wait till later in my life to live someplace for longer than a year. When I went to school and I was there 4 years, I was like, wow, 4 years. Yeah, that's a long time. And then when I lived in DC and I was there 7 years, I was like, oh my goodness, 7 years. But when I lived in LA and was there for 28 years, I thought I was a Californian. So I was definitely used to moving around, and I think maybe Billy and Jeffrey a little less so, because they went to high school in the same place. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't their entire span, but I think they liked it too.
Yeah. I think it was a good life. And like I said, we've been exposed and learned a lot, been a lot of places, still going. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Love you. Love you too.